Welcome, Rochester, to our next episode of Let's Get Lit. We have some amazing people in the studio. Of course, we have Naima, and we have someone that is extra special here for Rochester, and we're going to allow him to introduce himself, Dr. Miller.
What's up, Rochester? It's Dr. Paul Miller here, Rochester's own. Yeah, I know I'm right from Hudson and Joseph Avenue, right from Rochester, from the hood.
Hood rich. So we start off our interviews the same way each week. And when did you fall in love with literacy?
So I don't know if you're going to like my answer. So I got to keep it real with y'all.
Keep it real.
I can't say that I ever fell in love with literacy. So I'm not going to sit here and lie to y'all. I love it, but I'm not in love with it. So there's a difference, right? So I love literacy because I couldn't do what I do, or I can't. I would be a hypocrite if I didn't love literacy because, you know, it's gotten me so far in life being able to read. But am I in love with it? Nah, it's not long walks on the beach and flowers and candy with me. I'd rather watch the movie. I'd rather, listen to the podcast. I'd rather see the visual. But the truth of it is, I know how important reading is and how necessary it is. And so do I love it? I love it. But in love with it, I can't say that I'm in love with literacy. But I love what it does for me.
Well, I think that's very important because I think so often people look at literacy only from the standpoint of paper words. And something you said was very powerful and oftentimes not taken as a literary foundation. And that is when you speak, it's literacy. When I listen to the words that you say, that's literacy. When I see adult picture on the wall, that's literacy. And oftentimes we get to it from different angles. Like your love may be an audiobook, my love may be the actual book, but we still have a love for that lit experience. So I appreciate your authentic pieces to the puzzle of literacy because it's not a one size fit all. And I'm glad that you brought that perspective to the table because oftentimes people get wedded to just the book and not other angles that literacy can be found. Naima?
Peace and love, family. This is Naima Nateri. I want to just go back a bit and give a formal introduction to you because I think that your work needs that formal introduction.
Thank you.
Dr. Miller holds the EDD in Executive Leadership and a Master's of Education in Administration from both St. John Fisher. He is also has a Bachelor of Science, in Physical Education and Teacher Cert from SUNY Brockport, my alma mater. Mm-hmm. Dr. Miller has over 20-plus years in urban public education system, specializing in school redesign, reform, and creating effective change for schools through collaborative missions, visions, and teamwork. Dr. Miller is the new CEO of Charter Champions of Rochester.
Shout it out.
CCR is a new organization designed to support charter schools reach their desired results. Mm-hmm. CCR supports 25 schools to improve their educator pipeline by the creation of a network certification and micro-credentialing. I like that. What is that? We'll talk more about that. New educator trainings and incentives for educators. So, yes, formal introduction for you all who need to know and who don't know you.
Well, from Hudson and Joseph. Well, I hope, you know, I like to be known a little bit.
I know the name, you know what I'm saying? I know of the work, but, you know, personally.
I like to keep it low, though, you know, just to be about the work. Stay out the way.
Yeah. So welcome to the show. And I agree with you about not loving literacy initially. My love for literacy came through hip-hop and through music. Mm-hmm. It wasn't through books. But I did enjoy, having people read to me. Mm-hmm. But for myself, going into a book, it was a challenge until I found that Just Right book. Mm-hmm. At the age of 16, which is pretty late for an ELA teacher. I say that every time we meet. So, in terms of your work, let's talk more about the
micro-credentialing?
Yeah, what is that?
So it's something that I'm working on to build a program with the colleges, and hopefully I'm going to get one that is interested. So they've been loosely interested, but the colleges are so stuck in the way that they do things. Mm-hmm. And so same way a lot of our educational institutions are. They're so stuck in this box and not willing to see things differently when there's so many other opportunities. But basically what's going on is, especially in quite a few of the charter schools, and I think regular traditional public schools as well, the paraprofessionals and the teacher's assistants are often getting thrown into teaching jobs. So the math teacher calls in and says I'm not coming back to work because little Ray Ray threw something at my head yesterday, so I'm not coming back to work tomorrow. And so the paraprofessional teacher's assistant is now, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to be in charge of that class because there's a teacher shortage and because it's so hard to find a substitute. So they might end up being in this position for a long time. So my goal is to, how do we support them? How do we support them differently? How do we get them a foundation? So part of the idea of micro-credentialing would be to get them like a 12 to 24 potential credits that would not be for a certification, but a certificate or a credential that could go towards a larger degree, but give them a foundation so they can be better at their jobs and give them what they need. Because often people leave the profession because they're not equipped with the tools they need to educate our kids the right way.
I often found, too, being in the education space where the para or the teacher's aide had more of a relationship with the student.
Yes, absolutely.
More so than the certified teacher in the space. And so there's a push and a shove between the adults in the space.
Right.
And they get offended.
Right.
The certified teachers do.
Right. And then this gives them more of a balance in the pedagogy so they can understand it a little bit differently and be able to get at it and get deeper into content and other things they need to be a good teacher. But just giving them a foundation and getting them wet back into, getting their feet wet back into the arena of academics and school and everything that they would need. So I've been tapping the doors of the colleges, looking to other programs. Like I know the Galas Sano Institute just did it for business, so I approached the president of the Galisano Institute and said, hey, why can't we do this for education? You know, if we could do this for business, let's do it for education. So I got some feelers out there and trying to make some stuff happen for our people who need or may not have the credentials yet to get, and trying to support those folks.
Does Teach for America still exist? Teach for America and the Urban Teachers for Tomorrow?
They do, but typically they haven't been here in Rochester.
One of the things that is very intriguing to me about your approach to education is being a visionary. And I think a lot of people oftentimes talk about the nuances of one being a visionary and bringing something different to the table of education. And one of the pieces of literacy that is compelling to me is about African-American young men and men. And I believe that literacy is our greatest social justice issue of our time. And if we could get it right for African-American young men and men, young men and men, then we could get it right for everyone else. What are your thoughts about the gap that still exists, that we're losing so many young men in the streets and in the seats, looking at as early as fourth grade, based on research, they mentally begin to drop out? What innovation do you think needs to happen to change that?
So, you know, and I don't even know if innovation would be the word I would use, right? Because I desperately believe is that all our young men are capable, but somewhere they lost it along the way, and why did they lose it? So just like I said, I wasn't in love with literacy. I really wasn't interested. It took me later in life to become interested in wanting to read or reading because I had to, and then really really learning from it to where I knew that it was going to benefit me. I didn't have that foundation. I grew up in a situation where I didn't have a lot of role models. I didn't have a lot of resources. And the role models I did have were negative. So it wasn't an aspect of where I was able to get that. So again, but I think it all starts with the mentality of our young men, and it starts with the mentality of their parents. It starts with the mentality of the school. So if you look, and even sometimes in some of my books of what I write about is we got to change the mindset of our children through community, family, and education. And so it's a triangle approach with the community, family, and education of doing things a little bit differently and supporting our kids differently, but supporting them earlier. We got to stop failing our kids. We got to stop failing them and not allowing them to fail and just passing them on so they're not building prisons off of their third and fourth grade test scores. So this is a part of the crucial, and it's about setting up systems that work. So the innovation is about making sure that if we're just talking about schools, making sure that schools have what they need and getting rid of some of the politics and some of the bureaucracy and some of the red tape that is not enabling us to put the items forward that are best for kids And so that's where I'm an advocate, and I'm going to fight for our kids is that if it's between doing something that's better for adults or doing something better for kids, that's not going to go. It's got to be what's about for kids. And that's so often that's what's not happening in our schools. And it's about what's going to keep an adult with their salary, what's going to keep an adult employed. You wouldn't keep an adult employed if they were a heart surgeon and they killed their last 10 patients. Yeah. You're not gonna go to that heart surgeon again. Period. But we got teachers and educators who have failed kids the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 kids and still remain with a job and won't take it personal and do what they're doing different, or the system isn't willing to change. So it's about changing those systems, and the innovation is being willing to do that, to take on the fight, but do what's best. But I also believe that adults have to be happy as well. So a happy teacher makes for a happy student. So you have to make sure that you're caring for your teachers and that you're putting the things in place that give them the opportunity to flourish. And that's where the innovation comes into me, is about being willing to do something differently and build systems that work for schools.
You mentioned your books. We have one right here in the studio. It's titled We Need to Do Better, right? 2.0 Teachers 2.0. Edition. And I want to ask you, tell us about your journey as an author and what inspired you to start writing.
So what's interesting is I never thought I was smart enough. I never thought I was that I would be able to write or to speak or to do some of the things that I've been able to do. And so I do appreciate literacy because it's gotten me there. But it all started with a conversation, because I was trying to figure out how I was going to take what I do and how do I take it to the next level. And so a gentleman said to me, and we've been friends for a very long time now. He said to me, you need some products. So if you are going to, you want to be a speaker, you want to do and be an influencer in education, he said, you're going to need some products. And so, it just resonated with, okay, what does that mean? What the heck does a product mean in education? So write a book. And so I started thinking about it. I was able to turn my first work was my dissertation, and I turned that into a book. And that was Black Females' Experience with Cyberbullying in an Urban Environment. So it's called Cyberbullying, Breaking the Cycle of Conflict. And so I was one of the first researchers nationally that looked at it from a Black female's perspective. And because it's typically looked at from a white female's perspective between the ages of 13 and 24. And so I was able to look at it from a Black female's experience and in an urban environment. And then I took that and just the experience that I learned from that, and I put it into more of a style of writing that was a little bit more comfortable and for everybody, because that type of writing is more for the scholars and the literature, and I'm not, I might be a scholar when I need to be, but I'm just a regular dude who works hard. So I turned the second one, We Need to Do Better, into just from experiences and trying to figure out who you are and how do you figure out who you are so you can help somebody else. And then the whole piece with that is that I was getting, and there was oftentimes where, I put out my second book, and I'm thinking my teachers were going to be proud, and they were going to be happy, and they were going to be, oh, I can't wait to utilize this. But there was a lot of teachers that they weren't so happy about it. And so some of those teachers happened to be white teachers, and they claimed they didn't understand how to use the book. Now, they could teach Shakespeare, they could teach To Kill a Mockingbird, and I'm not that bright, I just work hard. So I know that this wasn't that difficult to teach, and that material wasn't that difficult. So I ended up saying, well, instead of just being angry about it, I need to come up with a solution. So I came up with a 2.0 that has it's similar material, new foreword, but it has a whole teacher's guide. So it teaches the lessons on how to teach the material, how to teach the lessons. It teaches them how to teach it to the teachers, but also how to teach it to the students so that they could utilize the book so that we can get some traction with students about identity, race, moving from a fixed mindset to a championship mindset. And so trying to build that in and eliminate their excuses.
I think that's so dope to have actionable steps and actual lesson plans within a book for education, because teachers also practice learned helplessness. We are the worst practitioners. Well, they say doctors make the worst patients,
and teachers make the worst students, you know. So when it comes to actually like applying, or what's it called, praxis, you know, we are the worst at trying to apply what we think we know. Talk to me about, you were saying, who, like, why were they mad? Like, what did you say in the book that made them upset? Or did they, did you interrogate race in the book that made them upset?
Like, you know, so I'm multiracial, right? And so I've had white teachers say that because he identifies as a black man and his mother's white, I'm not going to listen to him. Like, I'm telling you. Like, talking about this in the break room. Like, where, and then a black teacher would come and tell me what was said. And I think that for whatever reason, there was also some publicity that came around. You know, you write a book and you put it out, and then people were interested. They wanted to see it. And so they said it was self-serving and I shouldn't make money off of the book. I shouldn't sell the book, or the school shouldn't have to buy the book. I think it was some of the, like, it's just, it's like ignorance. really, it's really like, I shouldn't get paid for it. Like, I should give it away for free. And like,
in America?
Yeah. And see, I've always had two things in life that I want. And I talk about it freely, is that I want to, first, I think no matter what I do, I want to help people. I want to do good. I want to help change lives, especially for children, and really do the right thing for the right reason. I have a higher moral compass. But on the second hand, the second piece of what I've always wanted is to be wealthy doing it. So I don't have to be broke just because I'm in education. Have to be poor because I'm an educator. So I hate when people say, oh, the superintendent shouldn't make that much money, or the superintendent shouldn't do that. Well, if they're not doing their job, I understand that. But because they're in education doesn't mean that they shouldn't get paid. Your surgeon gets paid. When you pay your attorney $500 an hour, you ain't mad at that. So why are you mad because somebody in education makes some money? I want to get paid, but I want to help people while I do it.
Teachers should get paid.
Period.
Absolutely.
That's a PSA. You
change your
lives. Everyone passes through the hands of an educator.
In order to be.
We may not be basketball players. And I know it's the finals. But anyway. Like, we should all be getting paid six figures.
But you're more important. You're more important
than LeBron,
Butler, or any of those other basketball players that everybody idolizes.
Or John Morant.
Because you're teaching these kids how to read and write and do math. You're their foundation. You are their hope. You are their everything. Those same basketball players had teachers.
Exactly.
So the teachers need to be valued and respected at a different level.
And I think it was just very poignant in your book when you talked about the misplaced priorities. You were looking at it through the lens of educational stakeholders, but as I listened to you talk about with colleges, and they're the ones that are preparing teachers, and with that poor, or as Lauren Hill said, the miseducation, it will also then turn key and miseducate, and that miseducation continues. And we have generational miseducation starting at the hands of a lot of our institutions. And you started this particular chapter with a quote by Marion Wright Edelman that says, education is for improving the lives of others and for leaving your community and world better than you find it. And I see that that is not just a quote that you just throw, because so many people throw quotes in their books, but they don't live it. And you've been one to live that quote and make it a real life thing for you. Could you talk about what that means when we have misplaced priorities?
Absolutely. It's about putting, it's when you get into education, it's usually because it's a calling. So most people aren't going to be rich because they're doing it. Now, we deserve to be rich,
right?
But it's because you have a calling. And so, and what's your why? So I think the misplacement is when you lose your why as an educator.
Mm-hmm.
So I think too often educators lose their why because they had a bad day, or they had a bad year, or because they have a difficult class, or because their, you know, their contract negotiation isn't right, or whatever it is. But that why, if you stay in tune with that, then you're not going to go wrong. And, you know, so then I in turn to ask you ladies, as if you're educators, what's your why? So why do you do what you do? Because that's the key to to being authentic. That's the key to making the change, is staying connected. So in school and in leadership, they use, you know, all your mission and vision, right?
Absolutely.
But that mission and vision is in every place. But are you living that mission and vision? And is your why connected to the mission and vision of school? And are you losing that? So it has to do with keeping that that connection and making sure that it's at the forefront. And so, like, I know my why is going to sound probably crazy, because I had asked myself. And so often I ask myself, what are you in love with, right? And so being in love, because y'all asked me that question, that's why I was able to answer like that. Because being in love and loving is two different things, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, I can love someone and have high regard and really have a strong feeling and emotion, but being in love is different. And that's that butterflies in your stomach. You go to sleep and you wake up and that's all you're thinking about, right?
Right.
And then you, you know, long walks on the beach with, you know, with the candy and the flowers and all the other stuff that you used to do when you started the relationship out.
Right.
You
when
know,
I'm alone in my room. You know, sometimes I stare at the wall and in the back of my mind, I hear my conscience call
telling me I need to.
Right. So
it's not the first time in my life.
So what am I in love with? And so I was reading this book one time, and they it was called The Leadership Challenge. And they asked a colonel that, and the former colonel, and he was a superintendent, too. And he was like a mayor, too. Like, this dude was everything. And he gave a very atypical answer. So it wasn't like he talked about being in love and not just loving. But what I'm in love with, as I had to think about this, because my first answer was corny. And your first answer is probably corny, too.
My first answer is not corny.
So it's corny. And you know why it's corny? Because it's the typical answer. So
mine.
I thought about, I love kids. I love this. And that's what I said. I don't even like kids like that. No, I love kids, but I don't even like kids like that, right? So I'm tired of, this is going to get me in trouble, but I get tired of stupid-ass kids and ignorant-ass mamas, you know? And
not too much of the moms.
Right, I was like, what about them?
And that's not the majority, right? But you get tired of those folks, right?
Right.
But what am I in love with? And I'm not in love with that. But what I am in love with, I'm in love with winning. So I love to win. So if we went outside, I want to, and we race backwards, I want to win, right? If we have a cooking contest, I want to win. If we playing video games, I want to win. So my goal in life is to win, but win for our kids, and then to show them how to win. So winning motivates me. So if I have a school, I want my school to be more successful than your school, and that's my why. So I want to win. So when I averaged a 95% graduation rate, 100% acceptance to college for all black males in this 90% poverty environment, I want to win. I want to put it in your face because you said I couldn't do it. I want to show you that I can do it. But really, all that is fun for a few minutes, but it's really about winning for our kids and then teaching them how to win. And so staying connected to that why is why I do it and why I would want other people to also be connected to their why.
Cleonda, what's your why?
My why is real simple, but it's very deep. My why is to bring about systemic change within the hearts of individuals within our community to leave it better, not only than where they found it, but understand that each one needs the other to be greater. And when we have that village mindset and understand what that means through common unity, then it changes the trajectory within a classroom. It changes the way we look at unity within the school community, which will bleed into the community in which they reside in. So when you begin to understand relationships and why it's important to build, it will change. I can put anything before you. If I have a relationship with you and we build in, there's nothing you won't do because, number one, you trust me. Number two, you know I love you. And number three, you know I'm not going to take anything but the best from you. And when you have that type of standard from the gate, I mean, from day one, it changes how one leads because you're a sub leader within the leadership of a school. And until we change how we view leadership and see that leadership is not just the principal or the superintendent, our scholars are leaders. You as a teacher are a leader. Our different stakeholders in the community are leaders. So how do we use our ability to lead one to the finish line? So that's my why. My why is to change mindsets. My why is to enhance joy back into learning because we've lost it. My why is to make learning fun and enjoyable, but the challenge got to be real. And we got to stop throwing around $2 words, rigor, and all this other foolishness. And nobody really understands culturally relevant pedagogy. And they just want to throw around the hot topics, but they don't live it. They're not being it. And they're going to call you out on it. Mm-hmm. And my kids know I will roll up on you wherever you at. Miss my class and I see you on the block. They know I'm rolling up on you. And that's different because I have that.
Cachet.
I have that relationship. So, Naima.
My why is to disrupt, to dismantle status quos. My why is to get free, basically. So, and to know that our ancestors weren't afforded the luxury of education. You know, it was illegal. So my why is pretty much on some abolitionist vibes. It's to get free. That's it. Keep it short and sweet for the sake of time.
Give us free.
Give us free.
Well, you know what? We always get to this point when it's like lit. And everybody's excited about what we're doing, hitting us off with songs and rhymes and everything else. You know, the movies. But we're at that piece where it's time to say goodbye to all our family.
We got to go already.
We got to go already. That 30 minutes came and
I
gone.
I got two more books we wanted to talk about. Come on, y'all. I got two more books coming.
Well, what I want you to do before we close is please drop the titles and ways in which people can explore your literacy.
And all of your handles.
Right, right. So the three currently are all on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and I will be selling them through my website, which is being built. The two new ones, one is a kid's book, The Good Me, The Hood Me, Bettering Me. That is a children's book that it will be coming out hopefully in September. And then somewhere between November and January, From the Gutter to Greatness. And that will be coming out and dealing with the black male struggle, mental health, trauma, education, all that other stuff that will hopefully get some folks to pick up a book and read.
Well, that's what's up. So I will leave us on this note by the words of Paul Lawrence Dunbar. We wear the mask. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. The debt we pay to human guile with torn and bleeding hearts. We smile. Let's get lit.